We are pretty good at watching trends. We have a lot of data from early 2000s till now. And if you look at like the amount of office paper that is shipped in the United States, it's gone down 36% since COVID.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, organizational strategist and creator of the Organizational Scaffold System. Let's get into it. Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm Carol Schultz. I have a favor to ask. If you aren't already following us on Spotify, now's the time, so you stay alerted with each and every new episode. All right, so today we're going to hear firsthand from a CEO who has completely transformed her offering to stay relevant. In times like these, brand survival truly comes down to whether you're able to adjust to customer needs and technological needs. And I have CEO of Match Engine, Melinda Powelson, here with me today to share her story. And I'm delighted because she's got a really interesting story. So, Melinda, thanks for joining me. But before we get into today's topic, tell us a little bit about Match Engine and what you do.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that, Carol. And thank you so much for having me on your show. I really enjoyed the previous episodes and listening to them. So Match Engine is a company that matches customers and buyers in a 3.5 minute phone call, typically in businesses that are compliance oriented. They are, we do document shredding, records destruction, record storage, medical waste, and electronic recycling. And we get customers who are looking for service providers in those needs. And we have a network of service providers in North America that service them. So that's the core of what our business is.
So your company started as a completely different service.
Yes.
Founded by your father, dating back to 1977. So walk us through, you know, his founding of the company and the evolution.
Sure. My dad was a pioneer in the recycling industry and actually started the company just a little while after the first Earth Day. It was called Triar Recycling. They grew into the largest recycling company in the Denver metropolitan area. And sold in 2004. The part of the company that is still alive is the internet service part. And it came because we built a website in 1995 for Triar that started getting leads around the country because there wasn't a lot of websites at that point. And there wasn't even Google at that point.
Well, right. I mean, you think about the internet basically came to everybody sort of like around 1994, right?
Right. So it's right at the cusp of when the internet was the only website in therefore shredding and recycling. They started getting things. And because he was an entrepreneur, he said, I want these opportunities to go to other small business people. Can we do something with them? And so at that point, it was a phone call. Somebody in New York was looking for shredding or recycling. You'd call your friend and do the match over the phone. Mm-hmm. It evolved in the next few years into what became a really early lead generation website called Shred Nations. And Shred Nations, you put the lead on the internet and then sent it by email in the beginning days to people who serviced it across the United States. So it was very early and before lead gen was a thing. So
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And then really as the company sold in 2004, part of it sold to Waste Management and part of it sold to Cintas. And neither of them wanted the internet part that was losing money at that point. It was losing around $20,000 a month, you know, and so he excluded Shred Nations from the sale of those two entities and let it grow into the business that is now Match Engine.
What was the problem with the internet business that it was losing $20K a month?
This, it wasn't enough. We didn't understand the pricing model at that point.
Yeah.
You started out with like giving people leads for free and expecting to get paid a percentage of the sale, and people didn't want to do that. And so over time, it became a pay-per-lead volume service.
Interesting. So in those key moments of pivoting and shedding the old brand and forming a new vision, can you paint me a picture of how those decisions were made? What type of conversations were the catalyst for that?
Over years, it you know, comes down to fundamentals of business about what you can charge for and provide value to your customers. And when you're an early platform business, which is what this is, You've got customers on the demand side, which are people who are looking for services, and you need to have a, you need, when they call in, you need to have a network of providers to service them. Otherwise, there's a lot of frustration. Mm-hmm. And then on the service provider side, you need to provide enough value to them so that when a customer comes in and makes a match, it helps their business move forward. And the fundamentals of all of that is the economics of both pieces. So as the company grows, you know, you have to make sure that you have enough money on both sides to move it forward, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, it certainly does.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, looking at your whole evolution, I mean, this is ultimately, I think, one of the best examples that I've ever seen since I've been doing the Evolving Your Workplace podcast of evolving your workplace, right? You know, and when you look at, like, for leaders out there that are struggling to keep up with the constantly changing industries, you know, what advice, because you've been through this, what advice do you have them for them in a moment of, we are clearly behind, we see our competitors adopting changes that we haven't been able to or have resisted, right? We need to change something to stay afloat.
I think it's being open to risk and willing to take a chance on something that isn't formed yet. And we're all facing that right now. And COVID fundamentally changed the way business is done. A lot of the businesses that we served were very centered on downtown marketplaces. Mm-hmm. And with people working at home, you know, we have 26% of the workforce now still working from their houses. You have to be able to adapt and change to the current landscape. I did a speech recently about fishing where the fish are, and the fish used to all be in this nice big pool downtown.
Right.
And now they're in tributaries everywhere.
Yeah.
And if you don't go out and get the fish in the tributaries, you're not going to have the same kind of business that you did in the past. You got also change in AI. AI search is coming. I just went to a conference in New York called SEO Week about the way that search is evolving. And we know that search engines produce 90% of the leads that we get through. Mm-hmm. And as search engines evolve into AI search, you're going to have to be in those AI search packs.
That's right.
Just like, and if you don't plan for that and don't take the risk for it, you're not going to have a business either. It's the same kind of thing where the fish are moving. And so I think always being aware of where your customers are, where they're moving, and then planning to be there is incredibly important.
Yeah. You know, I could have a whole conversation with you on AI, which we're not going to do, obviously. But what I will say is we started my company working with somebody to do AEO in January. All right? And as we're recording this, it's, you know, early May, right? So a little, just about 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I cannot tell you the phone calls I've already been getting from people who found me through AI.
Yeah, well, it's coming. It's not there yet, but if you don't start evolving your business to where it's going to be, you're not going to have much of a business left. And and Google, who is 90% of search, is moving that way. I mean, all you have to do is look at when you type in a thing, how much
you get the AI results.
Is taken by Gemini. It's huge.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, we've been doing a lot of work through Gemini is in some of the things that we've been doing because of that. You know, people, I'm like, well, I always ask people that schedule calls with me, where'd you find me? Mm-hmm. ChatGPT, Google, which of course is really Gemini, right?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't had anybody say, you know, Anthropic, Perplexity, or any of the other ones yet, but that's okay. I mean, I'm convinced because it increases every month. That'll start evolving as well, right?
Yeah. And so just like you're looking at where search is changing and adapting, that's what everybody needs to do. I mean, if we just are stuck in the way that we've always done things, we're going to get left behind. I'm sure of that.
Yeah. You mentioned you have to be open to risk. And of course, risk means different things to different people, right?
Right.
So let's you know, look at, you know, when you mention risk and having to be open to it, how do you define that?
We all do business a way that we're very comfortable with and have developed processes and systems that work for today. And I think about risk of having to change my processes that I know work today to a landscape that works differently tomorrow. And for us, it's a lot about adapting new technology and investing in the technology and being willing to say, if I could do it today the right way, does yesterday's methods work the same way? And there's a big risk in changing the way you do things.
Yeah.
We have a phone team of 15 people that take the calls that come in every day. And now AI is here and you get a choice about how you use AI. A lot of people are using AI to answer the phone call and replace people. And we are different than that. We want to use AI to make our phone team the best it can be.
Yeah, I agree.
And so now we have a system, we've developed a system that helps each person do better in their job every day, not replace them. Mm-hmm. But that's a risk because you still are paying the cost of all the people in your phone center while other people are reducing their cost to next to nothing by using AI agents. And you just have to make a choice.
Yeah, you know, and I want to address that because personally, I absolutely cannot stand talking to a bot. Now, is that because of my generation where I came from?
Yeah.
It's very possible that, if not probable, that's part of it. Right. But, you know, I'm old school sales, right? And I think if you asked anybody that does old school sales, they're going to say the same thing. I don't want to talk to a machine. I want to actually speak to a human. And it's causing me to actually cancel certain technologies we use. I'm like, I'm not going to just talk to a bot. I'm sorry, I'm not.
Well, and that's about understanding your customer. So our customers tend to be in the 55 to 65 year old range because they are the people that produced paper and care about destroying it.
Yeah, boomers
and
X.
And when you talk about a bot that's going to look, you know, someone like me answering a bot, there's no way I'm going to do it either because I want to know that somebody cares about what's happening.
That's right.
So
I think there's going to be a resistance, frankly, to this.
Yeah. And there's going to be some industries where it works really well for, you know, if I'm at a hotel and I want to order towels, that's a pretty low risk decision.
Right.
But when it's something I care about, I need a human.
Yeah, I completely agree. And like I said, I think that when people start to resist this and say, this is not working for me, I'm going to do business with somebody else, companies are going to have to start changing their mind. You know, I read an article recently, Mark Benioff, the CEO of Salesforce.com, recently laid off 5,000 people. And I don't remember what that point was from the time of the layoff to the time of the article that said, shit, AI is not doing as good of a job as we thought it was going to do, which is why we laid off 5,000 people. We've got to start rehiring.
I think that's going to happen over and over again.
Yep. And I will say here, as somebody who spent 30 years as a professional headhunter, those who have not gotten jobs absolutely should go back to work for them and keep looking for a job, full-time job.
Yep.
And telling them to go take a hike. You don't care about me. There's no loyalty there with these publicly traded companies.
Right.
You know, I think that's one of the real benefits of being a privately held company anymore. You don't have to bow to Wall Street.
Yeah. There is nothing more valuable to your company than the people who work for it.
I agree.
I mean, it's your team. And I think when I talk about change, you know, having a team that understands your vision, understands the market, understands how things are changing and can quickly get behind it and make the shifts, that makes it a whole lot easier than a team that isn't behind you and is resisting change. And so hiring people that have tolerance for change is another thing that we should all be looking for.
Exactly. So Melinda, as I mentioned early on, your father was the founder of this company. He's now 82 years old, but he still has his hands in the business some, even though you've taken over. So first I want to ask you, how did you enter the business? What are some of the challenges in a family-run business that, you know, one of your parents started?
Yeah, it's a great question. Ended up here not, I was an English major, I was a reporter, I had children, I did a web development business for a little while, and got to a point where I couldn't do that and raise my children. And so it was easier to at least start in a family business that had some compassion for a mom and kids. And of course, my dad loved my children, so that made it a little bit easier.
So I started
as a worker and took on a lot of different roles over the years and liked what I did and liked understanding it. And when he was ready to step out, it made sense for me because I understood all aspects of it to try and take over his role. In the first years, he would come to all the management meetings with us and And we would have a session after the management meeting where he would go, well, this is what I would do. This is what I would do. This is what I would do. And in the last few years, he has stepped out of our management meetings and we have those calls more privately. So I get to tell him about the meeting and then he reviews it. And then, you know, in the last year, he's actually stepped back and is just much more of an advisor, but it's been a process. I'm grateful to have him. If I have a real problem, it's nice to have somebody who is fully in your corner, but it's also equally nice to have a business where he's not absolutely here every day.
Yeah.
And so I've heard it like, it was at a conference and the guy talked about handing the baton. And the successful business transitions happen when the original owner is willing to hand the baton to the next person to carry it on,
yes,
and not hang on so tightly that neither of you can mm-hmm. move forward.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mean, I don't think that's an epiphany, frankly, right?
Yeah, no, I'm sure not. It was for me.
and I will say that I believe the fact that you started and learned the business, right? You know, you're not the even remotely the typical Nepo baby, right? Who here, honey, here's a business. You can be the CEO, even though you don't know anything about the business
right.
or you know very little about the business, right? Mm-hmm. Because you and I both know, and I don't remember what the figures are on this because it's been quite some time, mm-hmm. but right. the percentage of family-run businesses between first and second generation that fail is significant.
I think it's really high. I can see that for sure.
I mean, if I recall, it's somewhere in the 70-80%.
Wow.
I mean, it's significant, mm-hmm. right? Because and what you're doing, what you did, learning the business from the inside was clearly, I would say, anybody who's going to take that over because, you know, it's. I mean, he could have, sure, gone and found a CEO that knew the business. Yeah, he could have.
Yep. But you don't care about it the same way as if it's your family's. I mean, there's a real investment when it's something that you've known for your entire life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want this job to begin with. And it took time, you know, for me to actually really want to be a CEO. Uh-huh. And once I made the investment that I wanted to run the company and that I cared about it, that was the evolution that had to happen in order for it to be successful. Is a
right.
personal commitment to doing it.
And exactly. And I'm so glad you used the word commitment, right? Because I've said many times over the years, there's a huge difference between want and commitment,
mm-hmm.
right? Want is, you know, you want something and if it doesn't work out, oh, well, it doesn't work out. You know, whereas commitment is you're going to just keep going in the face of things not working out the way you yeah. think they should.
Yeah.
You're just going to keep going. I remember, you know, when I pivoted my business and, you know, when I left full-time headhunting, very lucrative yeah. career
yes,
and pivoted sure. my business, you know, and funded it with my inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
My broker yeah. said to me one day, well, I hope you have a plan B. And I said, nope,
nope
I'm committed to this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? And there were times when I thought, oh God, this is like a wreck. But
yeah.
I know what we're doing is the right thing. And sometimes it just takes longer. You have to figure things out. And that's what I believe is true entrepreneurship, right?
There's nothing I think what you can guarantee is it's not going to be easy.
Yeah.
You can guarantee that things are going to change. You can guarantee that you're going to have challenges that you have to rise up and mm-hmm. face. And yeah, as I said before, the better people that you surround yourself with, at least in my business, the
yeah.
more likely we are to make a change and you know, succeed. But it
yeah.
is a slog.
Yes.
I've not found it easy, but incredibly rewarding.
How long has it been since you've been the CEO?
8 years.
Okay.
And I think of those 8 years, I would say the last 3.5 years, I have really embraced the job. I think in the beginning, you're doing the job and learning about it, but it takes time to understand what a CEO is mm-hmm. And what it's mm-hmm. not. It's a really big evolution from being a worker to actually running a company. There should be classes in it, I'm sure.
So. Well, there are probably people that are giving out classes in it, but
yeah.
I think yeah. that I'm a believer in getting together with other people of your own ilk, right? Other CEOs mm-hmm. and really, I mean, whether it's like a mastermind or something that mm-hmm. you have ongoing support, right?
Yeah.
With other people who are, you know, in businesses that are similar size to yours, because, mm-hmm. you know, somebody that's in a Fortune 50 is dealing with way different things than somebody like you in a much smaller company with, you know, only yep. about 25 employees, right?
It's a totally different mindset. And most people have businesses that are maybe 2 and 3 employees.
Right.
And so you're not in that group. I think there's, I haven't found a lot of peers for me. And I think part of the reason why is you don't look for peers is you're so busy doing what it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
That to lift your head up and look around is a luxury.
Yeah. Well, that's an idea for a new peer group for me. So we'll think, give that some thought.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of like, if you go to, you know, chambers of commerces, but you're talking to a lot of salon owners and realtors and that's not where we're at.
No, you want somebody in the B2B business. I mean, you're really like in B2B to C, right?
Yep. Yeah,
you know, and the B2C businesses are very different. I think a completely different mindset. So I've, you know, personally, I've never waited. I was invited once to the Denver Chamber, and they invited me to one of their big events, which was on the field at Mile High, and it was a huge amount of fun. But I, you know, most of the people I met were, as you described, in the B2C business, and I'm like, this is a waste of my time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just, although I had fun, but it was still a waste of my time when I thought about it. Like,
they have different challenges than what we have.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, and to find people with the same challenges you have is hard to do. Mm-hmm. And we're in at least this business is a category of one. You know, there's not a lot of people that do what it is that we do. And so I don't know what a peer would look like, but businesses do have the same struggles. So.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, leadership is still leadership, right?
Yep.
And, you know, I think back, you know, I was mentioning earlier, a new client of mine and, you know, he's got different issues than you do. And, you know, his issues stem from not really wanting to be a manager.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we're working on getting him out of 90% of the business, which by the end of month 4, he will be.
Right. Well,
he'll probably be out of it sooner than that, but yeah. Exactly.
That's that commitment thing to grow into the role that you are and let go of the roles that you're not. And
that's right.
It's not for everybody.
Well, it's not. And, you know, then you have leaders who, I don't know if your father fell into this category, who are controlling. They want to control everything, right?
Yep.
I started it. I'm the visionary. I'm the only one who can, you know, who can solve the problem, right?
Right.
You talk about passing along that baton. That's the founder syndrome, right?
Yep.
Nobody can do it like I can do it. And I think that's just, I mean, frankly, I think it's complete bullshit for anybody that's like that. I'm not suggesting that's your father, but anybody who feels that way, right?
Right.
And, you know, it's just, you know, if you want your company to succeed, you're eventually, I mean, we see it all the time in business. Mm-hmm. Founders who are unwilling to let go. I mean, you know, we could, Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're everywhere. These founders who will not give up control of their company.
Yeah, well, and then you keep your company at the ceiling of the person that's not willing to let go.
That's right.
You know, you have to let go. And I think, you know, maybe as women, we're much better at delegating.
God, I was just thinking that.
We've been delegating our whole lives because we can't do it all.
Yep.
And delegating, you know, to a team that you trust is pretty easy to do.
Yeah,
And I think there's a lot of trust and belief factor too that goes into it also, you know, and maybe that's women and the way that we create relationships is based on trust, a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And it's funny, as soon as you said that, it took me back to thinking about a client of mine who's a founder. She's a thought leader in the impact investing industry, an amazing woman. And she was very clear to me when we worked together about her vision to be able to hand that company off to someone else for her to exit. And she's not ready to exit yet, but, and she's not going to go till she's 70. I'm quite certain.
Yeah.
Maybe not even 60. She's in her, you know, she's in her mid 40s,
right?
Maybe she'll go to her mid 50s and exit out sooner.
Right.
And I think that it's really, really interesting how women are about that. I mean, I think about that too. I'd like to exit out of here in 5 years.
Right. Well, I think knowing that you want a future that is not the same as it is today and looking at and saying, what do I want my life to like?
Right.
And knowing that in order for you to get out, somebody has to take your place and grooming the right people and giving people skills and giving opportunities for people to rise up and become more than they are.
Right.
That was something that my dad did a really good job of. He built a team they were younger than him, and they are all still in the recycling and shredding industry today. And growing up to be CEOs and COOs themselves. And I think that's one of the things that is his legacy, is the people behind him went on to continue to do great work. And mm-hmm. I think all of us, if you could have a team that continued on beyond you and did great work, that would be a huge amount of success.
Yeah, I that's frank. And this is, you know, in case somebody has missed this, everything we're talking about is really evolving your workplace, right?
Yes, absolutely.
What does that look like? And I think these are such great examples. You know, we so often talk about AI and culture and, mm-hmm. you know, I recently had somebody reach out and said, oh, I'd love to be on your show and we could talk about, you know, working from home. And I'm like, no, we're not going to talk about that because I already talked about that ad nauseum,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. This whole conversation that you and I are having is just different from that.
That's great. Well, it's fun to talk to people about business and people yeah. who are serious about growing their business and figuring out what it looks like, not just mm-hmm. today, but in, you know, the next 2 to 5 years.
Yeah. So how have you been able, Melinda, to take the reins? Right. Really, you said, you know, it's been about 3.5 years since you really, mm-hmm. you know, jumped into that, committed to that CEO role. But how have you been yeah. able to take the reins and grow the company how you need to grow it?
Yeah, I think that word commitment is the definition of it. Yeah. Saying, okay, what does it take to make it mine? Because yeah. because we are not clones of the people who are before us. And every manager has a style because we're individuals. And so I think for me, it was getting the right team around me, which meant mm-hmm. saying goodbye to some people who had been here for a long time.
Yeah.
And recognizing that they weren't the team that was going to take the company in its current version forward. And that is a hard thing to say goodbye to people who worked with you for 10 and 15 years. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, with a fresh team and people who see your vision, that helps a ton. So number one is team, or I guess vision, and then team, and then mm-hmm. yeah. being adaptive to the opportunities that are in front of you. We've always been a lead matching service. And we're developing an AI tool to help call centers. And so being open to new opportunities to advance your company forward helps mm-hmm. a lot. And you always have to have your eyes open and making sure that you're not doing too much, because you get crucified if you do too much,
right.
But that you're adding products that fit with your core values.
Mm-hmm. Did you alter the vision of the company when you took over?
I think we're maybe refined it is more okay. of what I would say, and really understood better of what it is that we're doing. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally, what we do is help the best businesses in our industries, the various industries, grow at a reasonable cost. And we can look over the last 20 years and recognize that when businesses sell, we can always tell who's going to sell because they're our very best clients. And they right. grow their revenue and then they sell and they grow their revenue and sell. Mm. And I think embracing that as what it is that we do has been helpful. But I think the evolution is like this AI tool that we're doing that teaches call centers how to sell better is just part of helping our clients grow in a different way
yeah.
and be better at sales.
You know, when we first talked, I asked you what your top priorities were for like the next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, right.
And you talked a lot about, and I would like to spend a couple minutes talking about that, about sure. how the industry, of course, shredding is changing because people are
yes.
using less paper and that yep. you're moving into electronics and medical waste. How did that happen for you?
Yeah. So we are pretty good at watching trends. We have a lot of data from 2000s till now.
Yeah.
And if you look at like the amount of office paper that is shipped in the United States, it's gone down 36% since COVID. So it's on a rapid decline. And
I'm surprised it's not more,
frankly.
And
then we look at the volume of leads and these shredding yeah. things. You know, it used to be 60-100 boxes. Now the average is 20 to 40 boxes. Mm. And you know the industry is shifting. And so if you're 70% of your business is built on a shifting industry, you better move over to something else. Mm-hmm. So medical waste is only growing as the yeah. as the population ages. Mm-hmm. That is a growth area, and knowing that what we do in one area can be applied to another vertical.
Right.
And then in terms of information is almost all stored electronically now.
Right.
And so it makes sense to take our incredible knowledge of the security and shredding industry and apply it to destruction in where information is moving. But I mean, that's like not keeping your eyes closed, right? Because like, I remember Yellow Pages, everybody knew the Yellow Pages were like where you had to be to advertise your business. And overnight, those things were gone. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it wasn't overnight, but it sure felt like overnight. And Kodak, you know, a company that did all those cameras and printing and things like that, once the iPhone came, overnight gone. Yeah. And you could easily be one of those people with if you didn't pay attention to trends and move your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Same thing with search. If you don't do what you're doing with AI search and you're dependent on old search tactics, you know, I don't know how many more years before it's not going to be the same.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at growth of your business, I know your AI tool has increased your sales by about 20-ish%. But when you kind of look through overall, where are you looking to, you know, from a percentage standpoint at least, grow your revenues?
Yeah, well, it's got to be in med waste and electronics. Mm-hmm. But it's a big change when 70% of your revenue is in records. And so we measure our leads every day and the revenue that come with it. And you can see incremental growth, but it's not fast enough. And so mm-hmm. what we had to do is take the money and build the verticals that are growing at not as quick a clip as what we thought they should be. And then this AI tool, if we are able to sell that, it's a totally different model, which would be a subscription model. And so you're not you know, you don't have to live off of leads that come in every single day. You would now have a base that's different than that, which would be really nice.
Well, yeah, I mean, a subscription tool is wonderful, and especially, you know, being in a business where you do not have a lot of competition. Now, that doesn't mean, I mean, that's good news, bad news, right? I mean, good news is, we don't have a lot of competition. The bad news, of course, is somebody else is going to think, oh, this is an industry.
Right.
I need to get into.
Yeah, I think it's, people have tried. Having that position from 1995 helps a lot.
I bet.
And being sincere about trying to help your partners and customers helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And we have a big footprint because we got there first. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, that industry is shifting. So you can't rest back on that. You have to move forward into areas that you don't know as well.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. Melinda, is there anything that we have not talked about that I didn't ask you, that I missed asking you, that you want to talk about before we sign off?
I've enjoyed the conversation, and I think what workplace is evolving is an important topic.
Yeah,
you know, and
we do too.
And it affects everybody.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, Melinda Powelson, CEO of Match Engine. I really appreciate you joining me. And of course, it's more delightful that you're here in Denver alongside me. So there's an opportunity for us to actually meet somewhere other than over video.
Great. I would love that.
This has been a really, really great conversation, and I'm you know, grateful for your time.
All right. Thank you so much, Carol. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.